Good morning, everybody. Good morning. All right. We have to. We have to move ahead. Last week we learned the story of Naaman. Naaman, who is the Tsar Tzavah, the commander-in-chief of the forces of Aram. Great man, wealthy, powerful, but a Metzora. In addition to that, it's quite obvious that this man is conceited, haughty, arrogant. In fact, he was the instrument in the hand of God to kill Ahav, and he's taking credit for it. He's the one who shot the arrow that killed Ahav. And what's going to happen over here, of course, is, as the Gemara says, that one of the reasons why Tzaraat comes is because of Gasut HaRuach, pride. And this man, and we watch the change that overcomes him. When he arrives for the first time in Shomron to the house of the Navi, he comes riding up with all of his chariots and his horses, and he's waiting for the Navi to come out to him. Navi refuses to even to come out and just tells him, go, jump into the Jordan. Go dunk yourself in the Jordan River, which of course he makes his great statement. What are you talking about? Hello, Avono Uparpa, that are the rivers of Damascus are so much greater than the Yarden. I do want you to keep in mind the fact that the Yarden keeps appearing as a central geographic location in the stories of Eliyahu and Elisha. Where is it that Eliyahu goes up heavenward after he and Elisha cross the Yarden and the Yarden splits? Elisha returns to the other side of the Yarden by splitting the Yarden. Right? Remember that? How did you forget that? Well, the Yarden is going, and here, of course, he tells him to go and wash in the Yarden. The next story that's going to come afterwards is going to be another few stories that are all going to be all going to be with regard to the Yarden. Anyway, the upshot of the story is the following: that Naaman is healed. Why is he healed? Because he has become humble. He's no longer the haughty one. By virtue of the fact that he finally decides that he's going to go down into the Yarden. By the way, he's Yored, he goes down and he's Tovel in the Yarden, which comes from the word Yored, to go down. And it's called Yarden. One of the reasons why it's called Yarden is because geographically it's going down. It flows from north from north to south. She used the right word. The rift. The Afro-Syrian rift. It goes down. The Yarden. The Yarden represents goes down the Bikah. Exactly. By the way, now that you mentioned the word Bik'ah, one of the things that I've been thinking about during the course of the last week, and I just haven't succeeded, except one thing that I found. In the Parsha, it's going to refer to the splitting of the Red Sea twice, and the term that's used exclusively in Torah, Ubikoehu. God says to Moshe, stretch out your hand with the staff in it over the Yarden, over the Yam Suf, ubikaehu, and split it. And then it says he did it, vayibaka, the waters were split. In Tehillim, it's never called Bikiat Yam Suf. How is it referred to in Tehillim? Legozer Yam Suf legezorin kili olam chazdo. In kili olam chazdo, we say in Davening on Shabbos, legozer Yam Suf legezorin, to cut the Yam Suf into pieces. In Chazal, in Torah Shebaal Peh, it is always referred to as Kriyat Yam Suf. Never called Kriyat Yam Suf in Torah, Nevi'im or Ketuvim. Never called Kriyat Yam Suf. It's called Legozer Yam Suf Legzorim. That's what it is. And Kriyat Yam Suf is completely the rabbis. Kosher Zivugin Shalodam, finding a Shidduch, is kosher kikriyas yamsuf. Parnosa shalodam is kosher kikriyas yamsuf. And a whole week I'm walking around trying to figure out why the different terms that are used. So I saw only one of the Mephoreshim talks about it, but he doesn't say the difference. He just explains why the Torah uses the term ubikaehu. The reason why the Torah uses the term is from the word bik'ah. Bik'ah valley. It's the Ksava Kabbalah that says that one of the miracles by Kriyas Yam Suf is not only the splitting of the waters. The bottom of the sea rose to the top. The Bik'ah became Ois Bik'ah. Now, the sea, there's depth to the sea. But no, the sea, the bottom of the sea, the floor of the sea came to the top. The Bik'ah was removed. So what do you have? You have all the water on the top. Then it split. I had wanted to say, in addition to that, there's a medrash that says, in the Zchut of Avram by the Akedah, Vayivaka Atzei Ola, he chopped up the water for the Ola, and we said it in a shir, I believe it's Rav Kook who said it in a shir.
He said water.
Vayivaka, he cut the... I said the water? That's great. Do you understand? In the schus that Avram cut the wood for the Akedah, the water was split by God. And Rav Kook, in his Siddur, explains that listen, Avram didn't have to take wood along with him. Why schlep wood from home? He can go out there and find wood any place along the road. By the time he comes to the Akedah, there are pieces of wood all over. But Avram wanted to make sure that the Akedah was going to be done to perfection before he leaves home. Avram doesn't leave home without the wood for the Ola, and not only the wood for the Ola, but it's cut precisely as it's going to be used. In the Schus of Vayevaka Atzei Ola, which represents the beauty of the mitzvah of the Akedah, the beautiful manner in which Avraham Avinu was going to do it. I'm getting all my names mixed up. All right? In that schus, Moshe split the sea. Vayivaka, and the mayim are b'ka'ehu. I have a feeling that in Tehillim it's legozer yamsuf legzorim, because there are two ideas, two associations over here. Number one, you know how chopped pieces of wood are called? Gizrei Eitzim. In the Beis Hamikdash, they had to bring, every morning, they had to put upon the Mizbeach, Shnei Gizrei Eitzim, two chopped up pieces of wood. Legozer Yamsuf Legzorim represents, number one, the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes there. He decrees. You hear what I'm saying? In other words, In order to tell us, the Rebbeim didn't go down there and chop the sea up. By virtue of his gezeira, his decree, the sea split. So that we have two things. The idea that this is God's decree, because in the Torah, the Rebbeim tells Moshe, Neteyas Yotcha, stretch out your hand, ubikaehu, you're splitting it. Comes Davra Melech and says, "No, it's the Rebbeinu Shalom. Legozer Yamsuf Legzorin." why do we call it Kriyat Yamsuf? I'm not sure that I know the... But I'll just throw out a thought. By the way, what was the term that was used here? I'll tell you the thought that came to my mind. The Malachim... Oh, when it says kosher zivugin sheyodim kekriyas yamsuf. A shidduch is as difficult as kriyas yamsuf. So the Gemara, all the Farshim ask, what do you mean it's difficult like kriyas yamsuf? The Rebbein Shem had a great deal of difficulty, like it was a lot of hard work for him. It was hard work. Well, of course it wasn't hard work for the Rebbein Shem. What do you mean it's difficult like kriyas yamsuf? So the Farshim say that the difficulty of kriyas yamsuf was because at the same time that God is saving the Jewish people, he has to destroy his own creatures. The Malachim wanted to say Shira at the Yamsuf. The Malachim wanted to sing a song of praise. So the Rebbe Shem said, Masi Yadai Tovim Bayam, my handiwork, human beings are drowning in the sea. Ba'atem Omrim Shira, and you're saying Shira? Are you crazy? It's not a kasha why Klal Yisrael said Shira. Klal Yisrael said Shira because they were saved. They were in grave danger and they were saved. But the Malachim were not in grave danger. So do me a favor. Remain silent. I have a feeling maybe the Rebbein Shem may be telling the Malachim in general to be silent because these same Malachim were the ones who a few minutes earlier had said, why are you saving these and destroying these? The Egyptians are idolaters and these Jews are idolaters. I don't think the Rebbein Shem wants to hear much from the Malachim anymore. So therefore, when they're ready to say Shira, he says, Master Yadai Tovim Vayam. And I'll tell you, I'm even thinking that maybe Master Yadai Tovim Vayam, when my handiwork was about to, my Jews were about to drown, did you speak up on their behalf? Now you can say Shira. But that's, gosh, all right, that's my own homiletic. I just want to finish. So I say, if the difficulty of Kriyas Yamsuf is, because at the same time that God saves, God also has to destroy, so Chazal used the word Kriya in order to, yes, two ideas are to be expressed. One idea that's expressed is the idea that it's split. And also that the Rebbein Shem is tearing Kriya. Do you like that, Bela?
Isn't it something that we always say here, Bela, because it's
confusing? Excellent. On the first day of Pesach, we say all of Hallel. Chalameid, and the last day of Pesach, Shvi Yishal Pesach, which is the day of Kriyas Yamsuf, we say Hev Hallel. And one of the reasons that's given is because Masi Yadai Tevim Bayam, unfortunately, Kriyas Yamsuf meant that human beings had to be killed. She locked that door over there. Because of other people, but now we have a student. We open doors for students. Yes, I'm sorry, Rita.
The term of mourning, and God was mourning the Jews.
Oh, good. Mourning the Egyptians. Good, it's happening to her too. I get my Avram Yitzchak Yankel's
message.
Sorry,
I don't know.
Well, did you hear what I said
when
you said you forget? I said,
just
join the club.
Yeah, well, I've joined already. I've been in the club for 20 years. So I don't know, but I'm just... You know what I want to take a look? What does it say when Eliyahu and Elisha... That was in Malachim Beis, right? Here was it, the first chapter. Vayechatzu, is that what it says? Huh? Vayechatzu, heina vahena. Oh, gosh, so now we have something else to think about. Why does it say Vayechatzu, heina vahena? It became, huh? Chatzi here, chatzi there. I don't know. All right. So therefore, I'll just.
Kosher. Women here and men here.
Oh, okay. So now we had an attack on kosher. Now we have an attack on separation of men and women. Okay.
No, okay, I'm sorry. I just want to get you upset. You get when
name.
She gets upset.
That's your name, Glad.
Yeah, that's right. Glad Drake. Very good, Taylor. You're doing well.
One of the important things that we learn from this story of Naaman is the question that caused a great deal of difficulty for so many people. Is tzarat an illness? Or is tzarat something that is completely spiritual? Enough of the commentators who had absolutely no idea of Torah Israel. Leprosy, what kind of leprosy? Shmeprosy is this? What did they do? What did it mean?
So first of all, you have to understand that Torah is not a book of medicine. Torah didn't come along to tell us how you heal illness. Heal illness? So you know what you do? Oh. Yeah, what about healing illness? What does it say this week, Sedra?
V'hoyom shema tishma kol Hashem elokecho shmatim es mitzvos of kol hamachala asher samti b'mitzrayim lo asim alecha ki ani Hashem rofecha.
All right, God is God is the great doctor, in the heavens. However, it says Rapo Yerape that God gave the right to man to heal. It's man's responsibility to heal. We are not healers. This is not what Torah is all about. Proof, and here Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch and many of the others, but he expresses it in full. Says all that one has to do is take a look at the halachot of tzarat as they appear in Torah, and you will see that we're not talking about an illness. We are certainly not talking about an illness that is catching, that is, what's the word, huh?
Contagious.
That's the word I'm looking for, contagious. Why would I assume that it's a contagious disease? Because the halacha says that the person has to be quarantined outside of the camp until such time that he will be healed, and then he can rejoin people. So we're assuming that it's an illness. In other words, those who don't understand what the Torah is talking about assume that it's an illness, and it's an illness that is contagious. So all you have to know is
assuming that it's curable. Does everybody always
or that it's curable?
They come back.
Yes, they come back. All right, fine.
And the truth is that looking at modern medicine, we know.
What do we know?
People thought all these centuries that leprosy was not curable and that these people were lost forever.
And now
it's not considered such a.
But the important thing is that what the Torah is talking about is clearly not a physical ailment. A number of the proofs. Proof number one, the same Torah that said that you should go to a doctor if you're sick, says over here that you go to a Kohen, you don't go to a doctor. Kohanim are not doctors. Number two, I'm going to try and remember as many of the halachas as I can. The halacha is, if a nega tzarat appears on a person who is a chosn, Kohen will not look at it until after the Shivas Yimei HaMishta are over. We are not going to interrupt the 7 days now. If we're talking about a contagious disease, this is the time during which the chosn is going to come in contact with so many people. What are you talking about? We've got to take this chosn, get him out, and quarantine him. Number two, three times a year, all of Klal Yisrael came to Yerushalayim. You understand there were more people in Yerushalayim than at any other time. Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot. The halacha is the Kohen cannot look at a nega during the course of the Shalosh Regalim. If there's ever a time that a contagious disease is going to be taken back, all you need is one man over there with leprosy, and all of Klal Yisrael is going to get leprosy in one fell swoop. And the halacha is Kohen cannot look at it until after the Chag. In order nicht zu verstehen den Simcha v'nyantem.
If we're talking,
maybe she will catch it. Maybe she will catch it. You know, what we want to prove is that we're not talking about a physical
a physical ailment. What we're talking about is a spiritual ailment. Yeah, wait, we're not up to that yet. Don't jump ahead. We're not up to that yet. So, number one, it's brought to a kohen. Number two, chosen. You don't look at his nega during the shalosh shagolim. You don't. The kohen does not deal with nega tzarah. Fascinating. The pasuk in the Torah says, "What is a nega? Skin becomes white. Kulo hafach lavan. What happens if person turns white from head to toe? The whole body is white. Tahor. The halach is his tahor." Now, if a little bit of white is an ailment, a whole body that's turned white, it's a vaday an ailment. Further, there's a halacha that if, after a week or two of confinement, in the midst of this white spot, there's a piece of flesh that is healing. Michyad basar chai, there's basar chai, real healthy flesh in the middle. Tomei. Aye, wouldn't that be an indication that this is the process of healing? Tomei. The Haftorah obviously is teaching us that we're not talking about an illness. This man Naaman has tried everything. He has been by every doctor. He's coming to the Navi only because, what did he have to lose? Some little girl in the house, a 12-year-old girl in the house told him that there's a Navi in Shomron. And when he comes to the Navi in Shomron, so now, remember, I think we can assume that he had washed often in the waters of Havana and Tarpa, the rivers of Damascus. And that didn't help. But you know what helps? The Yarden. If we're talking about an illness, what difference is there the waters of Parpar and the waters of the Yarden? If anything, the waters of Havana or Parpar most probably are clearer and fresher than the waters of the Yarden. It's clear. You see, in the Parsha Tazvia Metzora, we're talking about an anonymous man. If a man will have a blemish upon his skin. In the Haftorah, we're talking about a real man. And we're able to take a look at the reality of this man, what he is. It comes across so clearly that the man is full of pride, and he's haughty, and he's conceited. He's overwhelmed with a sense of his own importance. We see the Gasut HaRuach. Why is Gasut HaRuach? And by the way, all of the reasons for which Tzaraat comes, according to the Gemara, are all social sins against society. Lashon Hara, Rechilas, Maitzi Shemra, Machlaikis. These are the things for which Otzorus Ayin, being stingy. Now, all of the reasons for which Tzaraat comes are related to a man's inability to function as a healthy member of society. More than that, not that he's not functioning as a healthy member in society. He is a negative. He is an absolute negative quantity within society. He's causing trouble for society. He makes it difficult for people around him. So therefore comes the Tzaraat, and you know what the Tzaraat is going to accomplish? That the man is going to be quarantined. When he's going to be in isolation, all of a sudden he's going to begin to appreciate human beings. The haughty are people. What is there in haughtiness? Haughtiness means pride. It has no use for any other human beings. That they're all nothing. They're nothing! From nothing, you know what human beings are going to become to the person who is in solitary confinement? To crave. He will crave human companionship. And you know what he's going to learn? He's going to learn that he's going to have to change his ways in order to be able to get into society, to be part of a community. Yes. The point is, the story in the Haftorah does not have to fit directly into the parsha because he is a guy, and it isn't chutz laretz. All that we're learning from the story is
that we're not dealing with a phenomenon that is a medical problem. I understand your question. No, but it has to fit into... What does it have to fit into? No, first of all, in terms of his quarantine, obviously the man who has tzachat, something is bothering him. He is in some way, he is different than everybody else. I mean, I don't think that people would... I don't think that his closest servants would talk to him the way you would talk to a person who doesn't have tzaraz. Don't you see it written all over your face when you're looking at somebody who is severely disfigured? You think he doesn't feel wherever he goes that he's some kind of a pariah? He's some kind of a freak? He doesn't have this feeling that everybody is looking at him and... What do you think? You think that the Mitzora is just prancing his way through society and he's just... It's all one bowl of leprosy. You know, everything is so great. Why do you think he's running around all over trying to be healed from it? And most probably everybody who looks at him, and he can see the looks in their faces. You know what they're looking at? They're looking at a totally disfigured individual. And you know what? That's most probably worse than being in confinement. At least being in quarantine or for confinement. I don't have to see the stares of people who are looking at me. A freak of nature walking around. All sorts of blemishes all over his skin. I think him it's worse.
Boy, I got out of that.
Not really.
And I believe it to be true.
But not
why
this,
do you think
but not this king who's so haughty.
So they're becoming ice haughty. That's what's going to happen. That's the point of it all.
So the point of it all is... The point of it all is it's clear from the Haftorah that we're not talking about an illness. We're not talking about a physical ailment. We're talking about something that's completely spiritual.
But if we're talking about spiritual, then we're talking about a goy in Kutlar.
Yeah.
That has a different dimension to it.
Why? I'll tell you what it is. First of all, you know what's going to happen over here? The message is not as much to Naaman. Naaman is being used as the model from whom the king of Israel should learn from. The king of Israel has no use for the prophet. He doesn't even turn around when he receives the message from the king of Aram. Heal my commander-in-chief. He tears his garments. He tears his garments. The Navi says to him, Loma Karnato, the Navi, he knows about it. He says, Loma Karnato, why did you tear your garments? Don't you know that there's a Navi? The point over here is not Naaman. The point over here is what Melech Yisrael should learn from this all. Fashtesnish, this guy, you understand? This guy is coming to Eretz Yisrael in order to present himself before a prophet. And you, king of Israel, right here in the same city, Sharon, I live a few blocks away from you. And you don't even know. We're not concerned. It doesn't make any difference to Klal Yisrael for all times whether Naaman became a tzaddik or Naaman didn't become a tzaddik. The message. And when Yonah goes to Nineveh, did it make a difference really that Nineveh did tshuva? Years later, Nineveh long had forgotten its tshuva and crushed Eretz Yisrael. The important thing is that the Jews should learn. An unknown prophet comes walking into a city, says five words, and they do tshuva. A man stands before the Navi tells him, go into the Yardin seven times. He goes into the Yardin seven times, and he emerges healed. And you know what happens to this fellow? He becomes a believer in God. Do you understand? There is no God like this God. Not only is there no God like this God, not only is there no God like this God, you know what else he's saying? The waters of the Yardin, better than any other water in the world. But he learns even more. The earth of Eretz Yisrael is greater than the earth of any other place on the face of this earth. You understand what this guy has learned? This is Atmas Kodesh. It's amazing what this guy has learned. And a Melech Yisrael, doesn't realize. The only ones who have seichel over here, the little girl from Eretz Yisrael, she has the most seichel. And then Naaman becomes a Baal Seichel.
and Melech Yisrael. So therefore, the point over here is not whether Naaman's tzaraat fits into the tzaraat of Torah. All that we have to learn from Naaman is it's not a physical ailment. It's a spiritual. Okay, huh? Did you want to say something?
No. I just want to say that the story really revolves around the feet.
And also, yes, and Elisha. But each one, there's a message in each one. And that's what we have to see. Yes?
Can you think that the important thing to say about
therein lay the greatest einish of all.
That's
you're right.
It's like the
you're right.
The
yes, she says that she's saying very good. Tell her.
About the man, yeah, I heard.
The man that people took in the morning, whoever had to go and take a long hike to go get
yeah.
Their man.
Right, you're right. Sarat was a clear indication that something was seriously wrong with this individual. Yes, it was terribly embarrassing.
Did
everybody? Yeah, Miriam had Sarah. Yeah, Miriam, great example. And what about Moshe Rabbeinu himself? Put in his hand. That's right. But remember, the Rabbi Yehuda Halevi in the Kuzri. Oh, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi in the Kuzri. He talks about this and he says that Tzaraat only existed in Eretz Yisrael bizman shebet hamikdash haya kayam, at the time that there was a Bet HaMikdash. And remember, according to the Torah, Tzaraat appeared not only in one's hand, and by the way, the greatest proof that it's not an ailment, it's not a physical ailment, it could happen to a wall of a house, and I'm not talking about Ritivut. You couldn't bring Mr. Ritivut to take care of it. You had to bring a Kohen. It could happen to a garment. If we're talking about an ailment, what are you talking about by here? My suit got sick. My house has give it a thermometer, give it a Akamol and look at it in the morning. That's not what it was. Yes?
It wasn't a surrounded the building. It's supposed to be
a
positive thing.
I'm not going to go into that now. Because that's an extremely difficult thing to understand. In other words, the Revelation brings Sarat, which is supposed to be bad. And what happened? If the Tzaraat was really bad, you had to break down the wall. You broke down the wall. You found what the Knanim. I've never come up. Real. I'm being honest. I never came up with something that satisfies me in an explanation of that. In other words, what it really means is, therefore, that the crime pays. Right, right. If you're evil and you're bad, and therefore there's going to be a blemish in your house, you're going to find that yippee, Baruch Hashem, there's Saratma. There obviously has to be. There has to be. I can think of a number of things to say that are maybe homiletic or midrashic. I'm not sure yet. I'm not really certain. Not really certain about that. So the fact that it can happen to a house or a garment is clearly an indication that what we're talking about is something that's not a physical ailment. And that was the purpose of the whole parasha. And there was something else that I wanted to say, and I forgot what I wanted to say. Huh? It's one of those days. Well, yeah, you wanted to ask a question. Did you ask a question? What was your question?
That people can see it on them.
Oh, that's everybody. Oh, you see, I forgot that.
Rabbi Cohn.
Wait. Just let's go. Let's stop the time. Who, what did you say? Very nice. Wait a minute.
You can't find his name anymore.
The Mefarshim don't say anything, so you have no choice but to ask your Rebbe. If the name isn't mentioned, you know why the name isn't mentioned? Because it doesn't matter. It's a message to every melech. If the name would have been mentioned, then you know what mistake you could be left with? That this is a message only for this melech. It's a message for everybody. The anonymity of it means that it refers to everybody. Otherwise, one could think, the Rebbeinu was sending a message to this Choshe Melech. Doesn't apply to me. So your question is a good question. Was a good question. All right. I'm not going to deal with Gehazi yet. Gehazi is going to come in the next chapter or the chapter after this. The end of the story, come on, we're moving ahead. The end of the story was, that he took money from him. But at least let's end with an understanding of the difficulty involved. Gehazi knows, I'll tell you where we're up to. We're up to Perek Vav. Perek Vav. The end of Perek Hay was that Elisha curses Gehazi that the Tzarat of Naaman should go upon you. By the way,
forever.
This is also, of course, an indication that we're talking not about a physical ailment, but we're talking about a spiritual one.
No, but this is so obvious.
It's so, yeah. No, first of all, what do you mean, Tzorat Naaman Tidbak Tocha? Naaman was already healed. Where? It's flying around someplace? Where did it go?
No, you know, I think everybody's making a big mistake. It's a physical manifestation of a spiritual
Okay.
It's a psychosomatic disease, and the latest research shows that 50% of sick people, if they believe they will get well.
The problem with Gehazi is one that staggers the imagination. He knows that his Rebbe knows everything. How does he really think he's going to get away with going and asking Naaman and his Rebbe doesn't know? How does it occur to him? So I understand, I hear what Tzvi is saying. Greed. Alright, at this point in time, for lack of anything better to say, greed. It could also have been not conceit. He was troubled that this guy got such great treatment, and you can use the word treatment in any of its many meanings. Such great treatment. You're right, so he should have argued with his boss. Such great treatment, and as I'll gain fry, you understand. Nothing. Yes? Yeah.
They're right hand men around them.
Yeah. Please don't. Let's not compare over here. We're talking about a Navi over here. We're talking. Yeah, but Gehazi, he knows. He knows that he's. Oh, so we have to figure out what was the flaw. You're right. So we have to figure out what was it. How did it happen? How did the person do this? I'm ready at this point to accept the idea that greed is blinding. Greed, mummies blinds. But let's see, we're going to have to wait for the chapter after this, when Gehazi is going to appear again, and he's going to appear...
Bye. But we saw the
tsunami
when he ran ahead. The reason that the child was not revived, the floor was out already before we saw it 3 weeks.
It could very well be that Gehazi altogether was a flawed personality. And if anything, Elisha, in a sense, adopted Gehazi in order to try to be makar of him. But let's leave Gehazi. By Yom Rubinet, chapter 4. We're going through a pair. Just sit back and a moratorium on questions for the next 15 minutes. The only one who can ask questions is me. Vayomru b'nei hanevi'im el Elisha. The sons of the prophet said to Elisha, Hineinu hamakom asher anachnu yoshim sham lefanecha, sar mimenu. Behold, the place where we are sitting before you is too small. For the first time, do you know what they want to do? Chapter 6. They want to build a school. Up until now, there was no need. By the way, you know what Chazal tell us? That after Elisha banished Gehazi, students flocked to him. And all along, the one who was, the one who caused students to distance themselves from Elisha was Gehazi. There's a minor Chazal that says that Gehazi, when Elisha would be saying a shir, Gehazi would be sitting outside, I don't know, playing Shesh Besha or something like that.
So people thought, if Gehazi is not interested in listening to what his Rebbe has to say, what do I have to do? Why should I go listen to him? Gehazi was a negative influence. And now all of a sudden that Gehazi is gone, people are flocking to Elisha. And they're studying. They need a building. You understand? The first time in history that there's going to be a construction project of a maised, an institution. So he said, Hamakam, the place, Asher HaMachim Yoshua, we're sitting Lefanecha before you. Sami menu, it's too constricted. Neil Chano Ad HaYarden. Let's go to the Yarden. V'nikham Yisham Ish Kora Echad, and each man shall take from their one beam. V'nasel Anu Sham Makom Lashevet Sham. And we will take from there, we will make from there a place to sit there. Do you see something in this pasuk? Sham, sham, sham. There. There's something about the Yarden. They're going to build their yeshiva for prophets by the Yarden, from the Yarden, for the Yarden. Vayoma. And he says, Lehu, go. Now you understand, over here it's fascinating is that the initiative comes from the students and the initiative does not come from Elisha. Vayomer ha'echad, one said, Ho'el na'voleich et avdecha. One student of the Nevi'im said to another one, please willingly come with me, let's go together. Vayomer, he said, Ani elech. His friend said, yes, I will go with you. Vayelech itam, and he went with them. In other words, there's one who accompanies them. Vayavoh hayardena, they came to the Yarden. Vayigzeru ha'etzim. Vayigzeru ha'etzim. They cut the trees, the wood. Where else did we have the word gezoru? What was it that Shlomo HaMelech said? Shlomo HaMelech said, cut the baby in half, gezoru. And give ha'chetzi le'echad, v'ha'chetzi le'echad.
No, you're thinking of modern Hebrew.
Yeah. No, but even
Yisra
is not in modern Hebrew. Yisra is like
it's a pattern.
That.
Yeah, but that's not what it's biblical meaning was not that.
In a particular way.
That could be. It was cut in a specific way. Listen, I'm sure that when Shlomo HaMelech said cut the baby, so you have to make sure, you know, each one of them is going to weigh their half to make sure that nobody got short change. So in other words, cut it. Yes, to ligzor taka means carefully. You're right. By Yehi Ha'echad Mapil Hakora, one of them, as one of the students was bringing down a beam, he was chopping a tree. That habarzel nafal al amayim, the metal of his axe separated from the handle and it fell into the water. By yitzak, and something that belongs to somebody else.
In those days, iron was a
no. It wasn't his. By the Nevi'im. The thing that was most important to them was their hands should be clean from any kind of loss to anybody else. Somebody else's money. I mean, I borrowed it from somebody. They were poor. Remember, what about all the stories that we had before? How Elisha had to provide for them and sustain them. They were poor. They didn't even have real quarters in which to live. This is the first time that they're building quarters in which to live. You know what it's like? Yaakov Avinu, who goes back in the dark of night for the pachim ketanim, the little jars on the other side. Something that I worked for and I got it honestly, it takes on a completely different aura. Over here, it's the negative aspect. God forbid that I should have caused a loss to somebody else. Vayitzak, he cried out. Where did we have the word Vayitzak? We had it by the woman, you understand, who's they're going to take her child away, you know. Schreitman, over here, about a stick holz or a stick metal, Schreitman.
Schreit mir, because it's Shaul. It's borrowed. Vayomer Ishul Akim, the man of God said, on a nofel, where did it fall? Vayareu Tamakum, he showed in the place. Vayiktsov Eitz, the Navi chopped a piece of wood, Vayashlech Shama, and he threw it there. Vayotzef HaBazel. The metal came to the surface.
You
know, huh?
Would this be considered one of the 15?
Yes, it is. But look what happened over here. Look what happened over here. What really happened was that the piece of wood, which naturally floats, went to the bottom. The metal, which doesn't float, came to the top. You know what it reminds me of? What are we learning this week, Sedra? They came to Marah, and the waters were bitter. Right. Moshe by Yitzhak Moshe, Moshe cried out of Hashem, by Yitzhak Moshe Hashem, by Yoreu Hashem ate. The Rebbeim showed him a piece of wood. He took that piece of wood by Yashlech and he threw it into the water. By Yimtiku Amoyim, the waters became sweet. By the way, the Ebenezer, and I think other Mepharshim say that the eitz was bitter and there was a miracle, Nez Betoch Nez. The bitter wood sweetened the bitter waters. So first of all, there's the miracle. How does a piece of wood sweeten water? Second, how does a bitter piece of wood sweeten water? Over here, there was the double miracle as well. The fact that it's an eitz, and that eitz goes to the bottom, and the barzel, the metal, rises to the top. You're very good. That's also this week's Sedra. Moshe Rabbeinu went to the Nile. Was it to the Nile? In order to get the metal casket to come up from the bottom. Very good. Very good. Huh? Yeah. What's interesting over here is the following. One could have been left with the impression, and it most probably was a matter of debate, do we really need to build put up a new building over here? Do we really need a building? There certainly must have been those who said, we've been able to survive all of these years without a building, what are we going to do? We're going to become soft and comfortable now. Now, if you would have been one of those who was opposed to the construction of the building, and this fellow loses his axe, the metal of his axe, what would you have said? Exactly the words. Asimim min hashamayim! Asimim min hashamayim! To stop construction! That's one of the messages of the parasha. Don't be a big simon man or a simon lady. I think that's one of the terrible things of our times. Everybody knows a simon for what? Everybody has it all figured out. Everybody knows on such and such happened. Das a simon and ashamayim. I don't know. We were on the way to the Yam HaMelech for a rabbinical convention. And we were caught in the floods. The water covered the kvish. Couldn't go. Hundreds of cars were all lined up. So you know what somebody would have said? Turn around and go back.
Well, that's because you didn't see the signs in
Meir Shearim
against that conference.
Against that conference? Not against this conference.
The Yeshiva University rabbis?
No, it wasn't the Yeshiva University rabbis. You think you'd find me by... Oh. You know what you learned from this parasha? And I think, I don't know, as I walked into shul this morning, somebody had reprinted a big article from, I couldn't read the whole article, all that Eichler, you know, Mr. Papalitica, the guy said Tzadik from Papalitica, he's the Belzer, the editor of the Belzer newspaper, Nat Yatei, Hamachana Hachare. Dina, you're going to get an education over here. Yateid Naman is the Litaim, and HaMachaneh HaChadedi is the weekly of the Belzer community. Now, I saw something over there the way the negotiations, the fact that Chevron had to be given away is a simen min hashamayim that the datiim lumiim are all wrong.
Wow.
You know what you learn from this story over here? Just remember this story. Forget about the simanim min hashamayim. Nobody is a balabas who can say, oh, a simen min hashamayim. You know what a simen min hashamayim is? It makes absolutely no difference than saying that because I lost my axe, therefore we shouldn't continue this project. It, as far as Torah and Halach is concerned, it's the same thing that saying that since a black cat, black cat walked past me, so therefore I shouldn't go someplace today. Not a whiff of the idea that, oh, this is a sin in Hashemayim. No. Okay, let's go. I'm going further. I'm going to get back to this, but I...
Explain why there is no separation between the stories they're copying and the stories in the
Bible. All right, I'll explain it. Yeah, okay. Vayomer, the Navi said, Horein loch, pick it up. Vayishlach yado, vayikacheu. He stretched out his hand and he took it. What a fascinating puzzle! Why does the Navi have to tell him to pick it up? There is the metal of the axe floating, you know, like a little sailboat. Why is it there? They're looking at a miracle. Why is it there? It's obviously there, so you should be able to take it. This Navi who lost it doesn't dare touch it until the Navi tells him, Horein loch, pick it up. Vayishlach yada, then he stretched out his hand, vayikacheu, and he took it. Do you know the significance of, by the way, the same thing has happened in a number of the miracles. Elisha tells the woman to go get all sorts of pots and pans. The pots and pans are filled up with oil, miraculously. She doesn't do anything with it until the Navi tells her, Michri, go ahead and sell it and pay off your debtors and you will live with the rest. Why did she have to wait for that? What was the purpose of the whole exercise? Why did she have to go get Caleb? Why did the Caleb fill up with oil? Obviously, so did she use it. A miracle, that which is a miracle min hashamayim, does not necessarily mean that you have the right to benefit from it. Until you're told specifically. Until you have to be given reshus. You have to be granted permission to go ahead and use the miracle. The Navi will not, the student will not benefit from the miracle until such time that he is given permission or he's told to do it.
Or perhaps there is such awe of the miracle that sort of paralyzed.
What happens too often, and we're going to see it often in the miracles of Elisha. Everybody's in shock. Everybody's walking around in a state of shock. No. You have to be granted permission. A miracle does not entitle you to the benefit of the miracle. I think the Gemara is the question on those. No, it's not the. No. In other words, there's a miracle, in a sense, still belongs to God. It's not mine until the Navi specifically gives me permission to do so. But one thing, of course, emerges from the puzzle. Doesn't occur to anybody that we should stop the project. Right. Umelech Aram. Let me read a number of more psukim. Umelech Aram hayanilcham b'Yisrael. The king of Aram waged war with Israel. Doesn't say which king of Aram. Now, what's important over here about the fact that it doesn't say which king of Aram, it could very well be the same king of Aram that had sent Naaman to Shomro, and most probably heard from Naaman about the miracles that were going on, he still wages war with Israel. And remember, even in the days of Naaman, while there was peace, there was a cold peace because they kept sending their marauding gangs into Eretz Israel, and that's how this little girl was captured. Melech Aram hayanilcham b'Yisrael. King of Aram, now he's beginning to go out more in waging more open war against Israel. And he asked advice of his servant, saying, "El mekom ploni almoni tachanoti." In other words, he decided, he took counsel with his servants, and they decided, "We're going to encamp at that place." Ploni almoni means such and such place, anonymous place, not even mentioned. Where else do we have ploni?
Beirut.
In other words, when you want to say, you don't want to mention something. Now watch what's fascinating over here. Vayishlach Ishu l'kim melech Yisrael l'mor, the king of the men of God sent to the king of Israel, saying, "He shomer me'am avor hamakom hazeh." Be careful not to go past that spot. Ki shom Aram nechitim, because that's where Aram is encamped. Vayishlach melech Yisrael l'mokom asher omalo Ishu l'kim v'hizhiro v'nishmar shom lo achat lo shtayim. The king of Israel sent his messengers to that spot. And Rashi explains, the king of Israel wanted to see if the prophet is really telling him the truth. So he would send his agents to check, is Aram really encamped over there? Lo ach v'hizhiro, the place that Yishol HaKim had told him and warned him about. Not once, not twice, number of times. He sent to make sure that it's true. The heart of the king of Aram was in turmoil, stormy because of this. Do you know what's happening? He thinks there's a spy in their midst. How does the king of Israel know where they are all the time? Somebody, there's a mole. There's a mole. How does he know? So the king of Aram is in a state of turmoil. Vayikra l'avoda, he called to his servants, Vayomer aleihem, and he said to them, "Hello, tagiduli, tell me, mi mishalonu el melech Yisrael? Who amongst us is working for the king of Israel?" Vayomer achad me'avodav, one of his servants said, "Lo adoni hamelech, no, my master, the king, ki Elisha hanavi asher bi Yisrael." Then a servant of the king of Aram has more seichel than the king of Israel and the king of Aram. He says there's a man of the Navi Elisha Asher Yisrael Yagid Lemel of Israel. He tells the king of Israel et hadvar masher tedaber bechadar mishnovecha, what you're talking in your bedroom. He knows. And now this is it. This is the first eavesdropping. Eavesdropping, that's what he gets, you know? Listening in. Hazanat Seita. There's somebody listening in. Where else do we have people listening in? Who else listens? Rivka. Here's Yitzchak sending Esav. Sarah heard the Malachim. Who? This is going to be this is your Chidon HaTanach. Now. Oh, that was the most genius kind of listening in. He makes believe me speak no Hebrew, and therefore he doesn't speak Hebrew, so he can listen in. Who makes certain that he shouldn't be heard? Who protects himself from eavesdropping, from electronic or other surveillance?
Where is it?
In Chumash. In Sefer Bereishis. Mamish, word for word, the sentence that I was going to say. Yaakov takes Rachel and Leah out to the field to tell them the Lavan shouldn't hear. And Rashi says over there, what does Rashi say over there? Yesh oznayim lakotel. The walls have ears. So you should not, now, as I say this Rashi now, as I say the Rashi now, it has two meanings. Number one, yeah, there are walls that people put in all sorts of bugs.
Wow.
And yesh oznayim lakotel, that's it. And then you know what? There's a kotel that has oznayim. That's what I just thought. Is that bit not bad, huh? You inspire me the whole bunch of you. Yesh oznayim to that kotel. So he said, go see where he is. In other words, he wants his men, bring me Elisha. I want Elisha. Interesting word, Echohu. Echohu really is a takeoff from the word that God says to Adam in the Garden of Eden, Ayeka, where are you? The Ayeka turns into Echohu, where is he? The Eshlacha, I will send the Echohu and I'm going to take him back. But you got no lemur? And it was told to the king of Aram, Hine, you know where he is? In Dotan. Ah, you're getting it. What's Dotan? What happened in Dotan? That's where Yosef was. Yosef, huh? And how does Yosef get to Dotan? He wanders through the field and he doesn't know. He's lost, and a man meets up with him and he says, asks him, what are you looking for? Says, I'm looking for my brothers. So he says, Shamati, I heard them saying, Neilcha Dotana, let's go to Dotan. Dotan, the place is important. Hinei b'Dotan. Because they're going to be in this parasha, I want to read through it quickly, because in this parasha you'll be able to think about relationships and associations to other parashiot in Torah. Vayishlach Shama Susim v'rechev v'chayil kaved. The king of Aram sent horses and chariots and a lot of soldiers. Vayavo'u laila. They came at night. Vayakifu al ha'ir. They surrounded the city. Vayashkein mishareit ishu l'kim l'kum. The servant of the man of God got up earlier in the morning. He got up early that morning. Vayetzein, he went out. V'hinei chayil sovevet ha'ir. And behold, here is a massive army surrounding the city. V'sus v'rechev. And horses and chariots. By Yom and Naroi Love, his boy said to him, "Aha, Adoni, my master, Eicha Naase." Again, Eicha, but here it has a different meaning. What should we do? Eicha, how should we act? But it's interesting. We'll see. Okay, by Yom, he said, "Al Tira, don't be afraid." This is one of the great psukim in Tanakh. Ki Ravim Asher Imanu Me Asher Otam. There are more with us than there are with them. I think the Chabad Avraham Shapira a number of months ago, it must have been about 2 years ago, was sitting at a meeting, and you know, how are we going to fight the leftists and the Avodah and Peres and the whole gang? So he says that once there was a Rav in a town, and the Rav was having a lot of trouble. He was a good fella, but the Balabatim were against him. The mayor of the city was against him. The goyim in the city were against him. It became a din Torah. They came to the Chofetz Chaim, and they asked the Chofetz. They told the Chofetz Chaim the whole story, and then Chofetz Chaim said, "I don't understand what the problem is. There are more on the side of the Chav than on the other side. The Rabbeinu Shalom is with the Chav." This is what he's saying. What are you talking about? He tells his little boy, or his servant, whoever it is, he tells him, what are you worried about? You see a massive army out there? That'd be my Shedi Tanu. The ones that are with us are more. Me'asher Otam. Vayit Palel Elisha Vayomar. And Elisha prayed and he said, Hashem, Pekachna et Einav V'yideh. Open up the eyes of this boy so that he should see. Now, what's interesting, of course, is we're going to have to talk. Not always does Elisha pray. The last time Elisha prayed, was when he brought that boy back to life. The boy of the Shunammit. He prays that the Rebbe Shem should open the eyes of this boy, his servant, so that he should see. Vayifkach Hashem et Eini Anah. God opened up the eyes of the boy. Vayar, and he saw. Vihinei Hahar Malei Susim Verechev Eish Svivat Elisha. And you know what he sees? The mountain is full of horses and chariots of fire around Elisha. There's an awesome army on Elisha's side.
Fire is not the sign of the
Did I say 15 minutes without it's all
she waited
until the 15 minutes were up. All right, okay. I think I made some comment about this earlier. Yes, Eish is not unless of course
it. It's Eliyahu who is protecting Elisha. It's Eliyahu who's taking care of his students. Rechev Eish, when we talk about chariots of fire, he went up in a chariot of fire. Elisha doesn't need to see. Elisha knows. Elisha knows. But the boy is frightened. The boy has asked him, Rebbe Laban, what are we going to do? So Elisha tells him, listen, there are more on our side than on their side. So what he wants is, he wants the boy to see. He wants it to see. The importance of seeing is going to become very significant in just a moment. Vayerdu Elav, they came down for him. Who came down? They came down, the army of Aram came in order to capture Elisha. Vayitpalel Elisha Hashem, Elisha prayed to God, and he said, Hachna et hagoya zebasan vedim, smite this people with blindness. Vayakein besan vedim kidvar Elisha. Laut. Excellent, that's the association. And we'll see what it all means. They all become blind. There's a mighty army over here, and they're all blind. Vayomer aleihem Elisha. Elisha said to them, Lo zeh haderech, this is not the correct road. Velo zeh ha'ir, this is not the city that you want. Lechu acharai, come after me. Va'olicha etchem, and I'm going to take you al ha'ish asher tavakeshem, to the men you seek. Vayolech al tam Shomron. You know where he took them? He took them to the capital city, to Shomron. Vayi kevom Shomron. When they came into Shomron, Vayomer Elisha, Elisha said, Hashem pekach et einei eile v'yiru, open up their eyes so that he should see. Vayifkach Hashem et einei, God opened their eyes, v'yiru, and they saw v'hinei. They're in the midst of Shomron. They're surrounded by the enemy. Vayomer Melech Yisrael Elisha, the king of Israel, said to Elisha, kirauto otam, when he saw them, ha'akeh, akeh, avi, should I smite them, my father? All of a sudden, the king of Yisrael recognizes Elisha as Avi. Just as Elisha, of course, Elisha, the one who had called Eliyahu, Avi, Avi, Rechem Yisrael, Uparoshet, shall I smite them? By Yonas, he said, Lo takeh. You cannot smite them. Ha'asher shavita b'char b'chol v'kashtecha tamakeh. Those who you have captured through your sword and through your bow, that you can do. Those you can smite. This is Ness, miracle. They don't belong to you.
You can't do it without permission.
Exactly. Just as the Navi before would not pick up the floating piece of metal without permission. It's not yours. It belongs to God. You don't have the right to smite them. And you know what he says? And here comes the most unusual of all. Simlechem v'mayim lefnayim, give them bread and water. V'yochlu v'yishtu, let them eat and drink. V'yelchu l'adonayim, let them go back home to their master. V'yichru lehem keiro gedola. And he set up a big pot. Keiro means it means a big suda. He made a feast for them. Vayochlu, vayishtu, they ate and they drank, vayishalchem, and he sent them, vayelchu l'adonim, they went to their masters, v'lo yosfu od gedudei Aram lavo v'eretz Yisrael. The gangs of Aram no longer came into Eretz Yisrael.
What happened to Naaman? He wasn't a general anymore?
I think that he was already on pension. But what's most fascinating is, we would have thought at this point, gedudei Aram are no longer coming in. I'm finishing. You have an appointment? No. We would have thought, after all that has happened, there will be peace between Aram and Israel. So all I'm going to end with is the next few words. After everything seemed that it's going to be Shalom v'shalva hashkei v'vetach, a son of Yisrael remains a son of Israel, and they're going to come out to war, and nothing is going to make any difference. Huh? Also a machlokes in the Mefarshim, because Ben-Hadad was like Paro. Paro was the name that all of the kings of... Yeah, very good. She said he's a bad guy. I mean, I think that's a very... Wait, just let me officially say that the Shayur is over so you can talk politics now.